Hello and welcome to episode 46 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. My name is Ben.
I'm Craig.
I'm Derek.
Oh, and there is no tank this week.
And there is no tank.
The inflection in your voice was like, there's another person coming, but there's not.
I'm sad the tank is gone. Well, he's not really gone. He's going to pop up later in the show. But
Yes, true.
Yeah. So
Tank is has begun his 3-week training process for his mission to Japan with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners can be praying for him for sure. Hey, if you're joining us for the Tim Challies interview, it's after we do our regular segment, Tech You Should Know, which you should stick around for. But if you really don't want to, or let's say if this is a parallel universe where this news is all completely irrelevant, or maybe you're just 3 years in the future and it's irrelevant, you can use chapters and skip to the Tim Challies interview, which will still be relevant 3 years from now and in a parallel universe. See you there.
So, a lot of Pokemon Go this week, huh?
So how about that Pokemon Go?
Everybody be playing the Pokemon Go.
I still haven't downloaded it, guys. I'm sorry.
That's all right. You don't have to enjoy all the things we enjoy.
Yeah. But I'm on holidays the next week. No. It hasn't been that. It's just time. But I'm on holidays this week coming, so.
Yeah.
I'm going to beat you all within, like, 7 days. Gotta catch them all.
I'm so upset that I can't switch teams. I told my wife
you didn't
to be,
know that?
No, I told my wife to be the team of like a friend of ours so that we could be on the same. And then I was going to switch my team. And then I realized I can't switch my team.
Yeah, you can't do that. I bet they'll add that.
I certainly hope so, because I would like to not be, fighting against my wife in Pokemon Go for all eternity.
It kind of wouldn't be fair, though, because then you could just, what if one team in your area is, way stronger and you just
That's
jump
true.
On that team?
That's true.
It probably won't let you change that.
There'd have to be, some sort of a time limit. Like, you can only change your team once in, every 2 weeks or something like that.
Or an in-app purchase. Pay $100 to change your team. They would totally do that.
Do you have to battle for Pokemon like you do in the old game? Or
no.
Do you just find them and collect them?
You find them and collect them.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The battling is restricted to gyms.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it's possible you'll be able to battle one-on-one with other people in the future. I don't know. They may add more features as far as that goes, but yeah. I've been hitting the Pokemon fever pretty hard this week. I've actually gone back to the original TV show and started watching that.
Nice.
Wow.
It's not a good show, but
no, that's what I was thinking.
It's mildly entertaining, in the background, but it's kind of fun. It's almost like, okay, playing Pokemon Go first and then going back and watching the TV show is like watching the tutorial for how to play Pokemon Go. Like all the first Pokemon that you end up getting in the game are that's the first one's Ash encounters, and even the selection of your first Pokemon goes the same way as Ash. He shows up late to the to get his Pokemon, and the only one left is for a fourth one is Pikachu, which in the game, if you reject all three of the first Pokemon, you can end up getting Pikachu.
You have to walk away from them physically four times.
You have to walk away. Four times. Wow.
Yeah. I cannot count the number of people. Actually, I can count them. I know exactly who they are and their names. But it's funny how many people, let me rephrase, have told me, man, it's crazy that you actually have to get up and physically move to play this game. I can't just play it in my bed or on my couch. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point.
It's also really funny how many people make fun of people playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
No, they're just the people who hate any trend. They're just the the hipsters or whatever who are too cool for it.
Yeah.
You don't have to listen to those people.
Yeah.
I don't actually know how I feel about the whole thing. I think it's such a cool concept and I want to try it out, but I got a Facebook private message a couple of days ago from a good friend of mine, but he lives over an hour away, and so we only see each other a couple of times a year. And he private messaged me just to say, hey, have you got Pokemon Go? Because if you do, can you tell me how many there are in your area? Or if there's good stuff in your area so that I can come down and collect them? And I was like, yeah, hi, how are you going? maybe we should hang out and, grab a lunch or something. Not just only be interested in Pokemon. But Uh-huh. At the same time, I guess if it's bringing people together through Pokemon, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's crazy, and we'll talk. There's we'll talk about news as far as that goes, and tech you should know. But yeah, quite the trend. How about some follow up? What do we got for follow up?
Well, I mispronounced a name. Actually, I don't know that it was me, but I assume it was probably me.
I don't remember saying it, so you know we'll blame Ben.
I don't remember saying it either.
So Eric Bouchard, whose last name I mispronounced either last week or the week before, who's our friendly BlackBerry Android phone user, listener. Sorry for mispronouncing your name. And thanks for the feedback that I got your name wrong. I do not like it when I get people's names wrong. It's like, it really bothers me. Mm-hmm. My wife, in fact, actually has kind of she's half Brazilian. And so she has maybe a non-American, I guess is the way I'll say it. It's not weird. It's just non-American.
Oh, yeah.
Way of pronouncing her name because it's spelled A-N-N-A and her name's pronounced Ana because it's Portuguese. And so people, you know, it's really fun. We were rewatching Lost and one of the characters' names is Ana Lucia. And when you first meet her, she's meeting Jack, the main character on the show. And she says, hi, my name's Ana Lucia. And then without missing a beat, Jack says, hi, nice to meet you, Ana Lucia. And I did not even notice it. I wasn't going to tell the story, but it seems increasingly relevant over the mispronunciation and why I don't like pronouncing people's names wrong. Mm-hmm. I didn't even notice it. But my wife, in a room full of people, makes us back up a few seconds to watch the scene again. And then afterwards says, this is my entire life in a few seconds. And I'm like, yeah, that makes me feel so sad now. So well, I love when people tell me that I got it wrong so I can get it right next time.
Ana Lucia is pronounced A-N-A, though, which is different to your wife's spelling.
Well, yeah, but the point was...
If someone tells you their name sounds a certain way, you should probably go with that.
Yeah, the analogy is kind of like if I said, hi, I'm Ben, and you said, hey, good to meet you, George. It's like, I didn't say George. Why would you call me that?
It'd be like me calling you Ben instead of Ben, I guess.
Well, yeah, either way, it's funny. No one spelled anyone's name out. They just said it. But yeah. Anyway, Eric, thanks for the correction, and we appreciate you listening every week.
So a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned that we were no longer on the Overcast leaderboards anymore, suddenly, for some reason, in religion and spirituality. And I think I figured out the problem, because we are still not there. Because of issues with how the show notes were showing up in iTunes, and I think it was FeedBurner's fault, I ended up switching the feeds for iTunes around in the iTunes Connect thing. So iTunes listeners, you're still okay. You're still getting the same. I mean, so everyone's still getting the same podcast. They're just going off of two feeds. So because Overcast pulls from the iTunes library, it no longer recognizes the show that most of you are subscribed to on Overcast as, you know, the proper one in the library. So it's not going to recommend it. I'm guessing for spam issues. Anyway, all this to say, if you would do us a huge solid and unsubscribe to the podcast and go search for our podcast again and resubscribe, that would be good. I'm going to start working on disabling the FeedBurner feed here soon because I just want to get off of FeedBurner anyway. Because who knows when Google will kill that off. But
Derek, are you saying that Google products go the way of Lassie often without any warning whatsoever?
Yes, Google RSS.
Yeah.
Whatever Reader. That was called. Yeah, Google Reader. Sorry.
Same thing with Google Wave.
Yep. Yeah, Google Wave. Anything that basically doesn't work for a while.
Google anything.
Like, FeedBurner has not gotten an update for like 5 years. So it seems like it should have been on the chopping block 2 years ago. But anyway. So all that to be said, a month from now, if you have not resubscribed to the podcast, you may no longer be getting it. So might as well go do that now. I will be putting reminders, you know, at the end of each episode for the next couple weeks, but go do that and you will still get our lovely voices. Well, our voices in your ears. Okay, we are into Tech You Should Know, the part of the show where we bring you 7 tech news topics from throughout the past week that we feel are worth your consideration. Last week, the death of Philando Castile at the hands of a traffic police officer landed Facebook in some hot water, not because the shooting was live-streamed on their service, but because the video disappeared a short time afterward, leading members of the Black Lives Matter movement to question whether Facebook was colluding with authorities trying to cover up the issue. Facebook has since said that it was a technical glitch, but they've now clarified their rules surrounding streaming live video. A quote from their statement: "One of the most sensitive situations involves people sharing violent or graphic images of events taking place in the real world. In those situations, context and degree are everything. For instance, if a person witnessed a shooting and used Facebook Live to raise awareness or find the shooter, we would allow it. However, if someone shared the same video to mock the victim or celebrate the shooting, we would remove the video." On to a lighter topic, namely Pokemon Go. In the midst of the fervor over the game this past week, many people missed a large privacy and security concern for those on iOS devices. When logging in with a Google account to any application, there's usually a section that says what the application is requesting to use from your account information, and that did not exist when logging into Pokemon Go. The internet then discovered that Pokemon Go was requesting full account access status, something that Niantic, the creator of the game, was quick to say was very unintentional. But, rest easy, update 1.0.1 of the game has been issued, which fixes the problem. And be assured that Niantic wasn't sorting through your email while you walk around aimlessly catching tiny pocket monsters.
Allegedly.
What do you mean?
No, just kidding. I don't know. But I will say this. I saw the news and shortly afterwards got the update. And what I found in personal experience was you actually have to go to your Google account settings, your security, so like account.google.com, I think, or my account, log in, go to sign in and security and see the apps that are getting access, remove Pokemon Go, which it will say has full access, and then open Pokemon Go, you'll be prompted to log in again, log in with your Google account, and then you'll see the screen that Derek was referring to where it says it only needs your email address and basic information.
Gotcha.
So you will probably still need to do that. I had to. That was 2 days ago, but just an FYI.
Yeah, let me see here. Oh, well, mine switched over fine. So, but it's a good thing to check.
Yeah, so definitely go check it out at least.
And while we're on the Pokemon train, I might as well say that, by the way, this game is insanely popular. It's only been out for a week and already it has surpassed the install numbers of Candy Crush and Clash of Clans, and the daily active user numbers of Pandora, Twitter, and Spotify on Android devices. So next time you see a server error when you try to open the app, try to be a little understanding of Niantic's servers, which really had no idea what they were signing up for at the time.
Hey, Craig, do you know what daily active user count has not been surpassed on mobile?
Snapchat.
Correct!
I'm under no, you know, pretenses to the fact that everyone likes Snapchat apart from me. That's okay.
we're not going on a Snapchat bunny trail today. On to the next story. It's been rumored for a while that Apple would start producing their own TV shows, and the first one has actually been announced. And it is called Planet of the Apps. Yeah, so it's a dumb
Planet
name.
Planet of the Apes?
This is coming to you from the company that named their word processing application Pages.
You don't like Pages?
It's a terrible name.
Okay. What about Numbers or Keynote?
See, Numbers kind of makes sense because it's spreadsheets, but Keynote is, it's a Keynote application. Pages, it's just kind of a dumb name. I don't know.
Would you have preferred Words or Letters?
Well,
Word is already
taken
by Microsoft.
Think of like an application named Scrivener. Like, that application has a solid name. That's a cool writing application.
That is a ridiculous name.
That does not fit with the nomenclature that has clearly been established by Numbers and Keynote.
No, I mean, that is a separate writing application. Like, Apple couldn't use
Scrivener.
I'm just saying, you can
Derek's make go-to awesome named application is Scrivener. I just would like that on record.
What?
Derek, Reaper would have been a solid choice compared to Scrivener.
Or like
a writing
bot
application?
That's good.
I'm not talking about for a writing application. I'm just saying give it an application in general. Open Office? Wrong answer.
Okay. Anyway, But the series just posted an open casting call for all developers of software for Apple products, looking for 100 of the world's most talented app creators. The show's format is still mostly unknown, though it's described as an unscripted show where creators are mentored and compete for up to $10 million in venture capital funding. The deadline for applying is August 26th. Would any of you watch that show?
I would. I think it sounds cool as a developer.
Yeah. But the general thought among most people on the internet is that it's going to be kind of like a Shark Tank-y show. Maybe crossed with, I don't know, Project Runway. But
never seen it.
Project Runway's good. I don't like clothes, but it's a good show.
You don't like clothes?
Okay, that kind
Given
of came
that
out
glowing
wrong.
Recommendation, I probably won't check it out.
And I'll probably be turning my video off on the Skype call forever.
The FCC has just unanimously voted to open up airwaves that would enable 5G networks. Now, before you get all excited for gigabit speeds to your phone, know that that probably won't come out for like 4 years yet. This is very much a gunfiring to not really just start the race, but to start figuring out how the race will be won, as there's nothing defining what 5G is, despite claims from some networks that are already testing solutions. Soon, the FCC will begin auctioning off the airwaves to companies like Verizon and AT&T, and the real race shall begin.
Did you guys see today, I think it was, that the U.S. government, well, Craig probably didn't, but the Derek, did you see that the U.S. government approved a $400 million research initiative into 5G wireless?
Wow. No, I didn't.
Yeah, I was astonished when I saw that. Like, I don't... Why? I don't know. Maybe that's ignorant, but...
This is what the private sector's for, man.
I know. That's what I... That was my first thought. It was like, why is the government doing this? I don't understand.
That's a little weird. It's a little weird.
Maybe I need to read into actually what they're doing, but I don't know. It seems weird.
It's because they need their finger in all the pies.
Yep. Ron Swanson would not be happy. Nintendo has created a tiny NES, and it's cute and adorable, and I want it. Called the Nintendo Entertainment System NES Classic Edition, it's got 30 built-in classic games, HDMI port, and that good old rectangular gamepad that will be compatible with virtual console games on your Wii and Wii U. It will be $59.99 when it ships on November 11th. Finally this week, Consumer Reports is calling for Tesla to disable autopilot until it can be made safer. This likely follows after some stories over the past few weeks of accidents involving the feature, including one fatality. Laura McCleary, Vice President of Consumer Policy and Mobilization for Consumer Reports, said in a report, by marketing their feature as, quote, autopilot, unquote, Tesla gives consumers a false sense of security. In the long run, advanced active safety technologies in vehicles could make our roads safer. But today, we're deeply concerned that consumers are being sold a pile of promises about unproven technology. Autopilot can't actually drive the car, yet it allows consumers to have their hands off the steering wheel for minutes at a time. Tesla should disable automatic steering in its cars until it updates the program to verify that the driver's hands are on the wheel. Tesla did not like this at all, and responded, Tesla is currently introducing enhancements proven over millions of miles of internal testing to ensure that drivers supported by autopilot remain safer than those operating without assistance. We will continue to develop, validate, and release those enhancements as the technology grows. While we appreciate well-meaning advice from any individual or group, we make our decisions on the basis of real-world data, not speculation by media.
Ooh, burn.
Also, somewhere in there, they mentioned about 130 million miles have been driven on autopilot with only one confirmed fatality.
Wow.
That is pretty insane.
It's much more than the Google car.
Yeah, how much are they up to?
I don't know. I heard 300,000, but that's probably a several year old stat. And I think that was only highway.
Yeah. Plus, they also don't have a commercial car, you know, driving around with lots.
Right.
Lots
and it's lots just of people. A test unit.
Yeah.
Or a few test units. A conversation with my coworkers earlier this week over lunch pointed out astutely, I think, that autopilot is probably the worst marketing name for this feature ever.
It's probably
true. You're daring people to end up like in a wreck. It's not an autopilot. Like, call it driver's assist or something else. Sheesh.
Yeah. Yeah, driver's assist seems better.
Anyway.
That's all the tech you should know this week. And if we left out something you think we should have considered, please feel free to email us at ask@techreformation.com. And for more tech you should know throughout the week, follow us on Twitter at @TechReformation.
Our sponsor this week is MissionAware.com. You probably know who MissionAware is by now because you've been listening to Tech Reformation faithfully every week, and we really appreciate that. Well, MissionAware is one of the many companies who helps us run this show because, believe it or not, podcasting is not a free thing to do. So, you can help us out by going to MissionAware.com and ordering some of their awesome apparel and just cool little things. This week, I wanted to mention the pint glasses, which I'm looking at right now. And they like, at MissionAware, they like putting theologians' faces on things. But I just think that of all the things you could put a theologian's face on, like take Luther, for example. How great is it that you can get Luther's face on a pint glass? That is awesome. And at a great price, too. So head over to missionaware.com and buy your Luther pint glass, and at checkout, tell them that Tech Reformation sent you.
The pastor's sermon is over. The final song has been sung. The benediction has been delivered. Then life happens. My name is Jeremy Lundmark, and I am the host of After the Sermon, the podcast where theology and life collide. I interview average, uncredible guests as we discuss anything and everything that you're going to face in the world today after the sermon. Politics, theology, finance, church history, apologetics, work, school, movies, music, moral dilemmas, you name it, we tackle it, giving voice to the voiceless every single week after the sermon.
And now it's time for our main topic this week. We were very excited to have a crowd favorite, Mr. Tim Challies, on the show this week.
Woo!
And we actually were able to sit down with him for an extended period of time earlier. And so you're about to hear a pre-recorded interview with Tim Challies. Hello, I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
I'm Tank.
And I'm Tim.
That is right. Tim Challies is with us this week. And we're really glad to have him on the show. Tim, will you tell us a little bit about yourself for anybody who might not be familiar with you already?
Sure. My name's Tim Challies. I blog over at challies.com. I've written a few books. Far more importantly, I am a husband to Aileen. I have three kids, and I'm an elder slash pastor at Grace Fellowship Church in Toronto, Canada. How's that? That cover it?
Yeah, that's great. And you have recently, maybe you wouldn't say it's recent, have transitioned career-wise, I guess, to doing the blog full-time. Is that right?
Yeah. So that was in October of 2015. Okay. To that point, I had been full-time blogging and full-time pastoring, associate pastoring. And then in October, became an elder rather than a staff
awesome.
Pastor. Yeah.
That is cool. Well, we've got a couple of questions that we sent you over that we wanted to talk through and just kind of get an idea of sort of the interplay between technology and theology, as you are kind of an expert on the topic. And we'll just kind of see where it goes from there. After, towards the end, we have some questions from folks in our Slack team that wanted to hear from you on various topics. And so if we have time, we'll get there as well. So Craig, why don't you kick it off?
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, one of the reasons that we thought it would be really good to talk to you, Tim, is just the fact that, like Ben said, you're a bit of an expert in terms of the technology, Christianity space. How do those two come together? How do we be, I guess, responsible users of technology as Christians? And so, yeah, you wrote a book about that called The Next Story back in 2011. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, cool. I was actually reading through that book and came across a quote that I'd like to read out, if that's okay, because it kind of, to me, summarizes, I guess, why we do this podcast, why we do Tech Reformation. And that was something that I thought was really cool that sort of lined up and thought it'd be great to talk to you about. Sort of towards the beginning of the book, you asked the question, what does theology have to do with technology? And the response was more than you might think. One of the aims of the book was to take us to the point in the middle, the point where our theory, our experience, and our theology of technology converge. We're looking for the sweet spot where our use of technology is not just thoughtful and informed, but is informed by the Bible, by an understanding of God's purpose for technology. In that place of thoughtful technological discernment, we live in light of what we know to be true about technology, what we know to be true about ourselves, and what we know to be true about the God who made us. So that's probably a little bit weird having a little section of your book read back to you, but I really appreciated that. And I think that's, like I said, a good sort of summary of what we're trying to talk about on this podcast. And, so that's kind of, I think, where we're hoping to head a little bit with what we're going to be talking about today. So in terms of thinking back to the time that you were writing that book and sort of what was going on around you in the tech space, and maybe in your Christian walk as well, what are some of the key changes, I guess, that were happening back then that you kind of felt like maybe we'd hit a turning point in terms of what was happening with technology back at that stage?
Yeah, I think the key change was actually a family change, which was my kids were starting to get interested in digital devices and so on. And so I had to start making some decisions about how my kids would interact with things. Mm. And so that family change then forced me to look a little bit wider to the world outside and see what technology was new, what were the new programs, what were the new devices, what were the new abilities, what were all these things that kids were going to want to do and sometimes had to do. And so really the book grew out of my own meanderings there, my own desire to protect my kids, but also to properly teach and train my kids how to live in a world like this one. Of course, growing up on the far side of the digital explosion, I'm okay at living in a non-digital world. It was migrating into this world. How are we going to live well here? So that was really the heart of it there. And then just as my kids are coming into it, it was looking at instant messaging. It was looking at social media. It was looking at having a device with a screen in front of your face all the time. Those are really the things that primarily were resonating with me.
Hey, Tim, I'm a big fan of the blog. I have it subscribed on my Feedly, and so I check it every day, see all your posts and things, and not really anything about you strikes me as the fact that you'd be a mindless consumer, really, in any sense. But as you bring up your kids, and as you bring up just really how involved we all are with technology every day, I wonder if you would say that technology is the same but different in the sense that we tend to not think about it much because we are so exposed to it. Could you speak to that?
Yeah, and that's going back to Neil Postman and Marshall McLuhan and people like that who would tell us that especially the technologies that are part of the world we're born into, we just assume them, right? We assume the world has always been that way. And you see that a lot when it comes now, especially, I think, to the difference between the Bible as a book, a bunch of expensive paper slapped between two leather covers, as if the Bible has always existed that way versus the Bible as an ebook. And people seem to think in their minds, the Bible is a book. The natural form of the Bible is that book. But of course it's not. The Bible was first given orally and transmitted orally, and then it was over time written in various forms. And it took thousands of years from the first giving of revelation to the time it was actually bound between two leather covers. But since that's the world we were born into, we assume that's the most natural form of it. That is God's own giving of his word. And so definitely we see the world around us and assume this is the world as it is. Therefore, we get nervous whenever new things come along, things that are unfamiliar.
What kind of things can we do, and maybe this is beyond just technology, but as we do tend to assume that things have always been the way they are in our experience, what kind of things can we do to sort of challenge that assumption in our own lives? Are there sort of practical everyday things that we can do as we walk and live with technology in that sense?
Yeah, I think everyone should read one book on technology. You could read mine, but there's far better ones out there. Read some Neil Postman or something. And just get this idea in your mind that technology is always changing, that there are always new things, and that you have biases towards the thing that were your world, the world you were born into, the world you grew up in. So when new things come along, typically you will identify problems in them very quickly and you'll be nervous about them. We're seeing that very much so in the digital world. And again, I think especially when it comes to books or certain other things that are the form of the Bible, we get very nervous about those new things and we can't see them clearly. So understanding your own bias, I think, could be so, so important. And then understanding the sheer goodness of technology and God's plan. One of the things I wanted to communicate in the book, and whenever I can speak about the topic, I always want people to know that at heart, technology is good in the sense that God gave us this mandate to exercise dominion over the earth. The only way we could do that is through technology. We could not obey God. We could not carry out his plan without technology. And so in that sense, it is a good thing that we need to take advantage of to honor and glorify God.
Yeah, that's good. Since that time, obviously 2011 is a little while ago, how have you seen the tech landscape and the secular landscape and maybe even the evangelical church, and then the Reformed community? I know this is a lot to pack into one question, but, I guess those are some of the things that we're dealing with, in our, I guess, Christian culture that we live in. How have you seen some of those things respond to the advancement of tech over the last sort of 5-6 years, in that time? So if you can break it down, that's great. But yeah, secular church and then Reformed community if possible. But yeah, have you seen those things sort of respond?
Yeah, well, I guess certain things have matured. Certainly some of our new devices. Back then, the iPad was not even out, or it had just been announced, I suppose, as I was writing the book. So, And amazingly, the iPad came, and now a lot of people would say it's on the way out, right? Mm-hmm. So it had its day. Everybody went out and bought one. Most people realized, it's not as good as everyone thought it was, and they moved back to something with a keyboard attached to it. So we've almost seen a whole generation kind of come and go there. Social media has matured a lot. It's come a long way. It's now become really woven into the fabric of our lives in a new way. So I think that's the main difference I see, is that the maturation of these things. And of course, they're still maturing, they're still growing up, but we are as inundated with them now, and perhaps even more so. The most recent screen time statistics are really incredible when you see how much of our lives we're spending in front of screens, what a dedication we have to our screens and to all these digital things. So, I think that's the big thing within the Christian world. I think there's still I think a lot of Christians live with a lot of guilt about the amount of time they spend online, about the amount of time their kids use electronic devices. Mm-hmm. I've just been wondering and writing in my own mind, haven't posted anything, but just thinking about it, it's almost like we're living in a dream, you know, where Elon Musk says we're living in a simulation. I say we're living in a dream where someday we're all just going to wake up and be like, what was that? We spent so much time on the internet. And, you know, will we just one day wake up and think, what was that anyways? Like, how much time did I give to Twitter, and was that really worth it? And we'll actually go and talk to people in the real world again. Or maybe we won't. Maybe this is fine too. But for now, it still has that element of that it's not as real as the world around us, that a lot of us are kind of playing a game or something like that. I don't know that I really answered your questions.
No, you did. Yeah, that's good. And I guess just sort of launching off of that, you did mention the rise of social media and the fact that it's now something that's just so ingrained into our everyday lives and the way that we live. I guess another sub-question I had, that I was talking to a friend of mine recently who's actually a church pastor, and mentioned that we were going to be having you on, and he was just saying he'd like to sort of know or get your opinion on what does the rise of social media sort of say about the human heart. Do you think, is it something to do with, a constant longing for communication, which I think you talked about in your book? And I guess how as Christians can we use that particular technology in a gospel-shaped way?
Yeah, well, certainly it shows that we love to communicate, that we are communicative beings. God made us to communicate first with him and then with one another. And when we talk about the digital explosion, digital world, digital devices, almost all of them are communication devices, right? There's maybe a GPS is not, but, you know, almost all of the devices that we've run out to purchase, that we have in our homes and our families now, these are devices we use to communicate at least on some level, and often primarily. So it does show this deep longing we have to hear and to be heard, to have a voice and to allow other people a voice into our lives. And I guess it's also exposed just how poorly we do it at that often, that we can listen to the wrong people and we can speak rashly. And of course, we're recording this on a day when there's been a period of time where over the last few days, there's been tragedy after tragedy in the world. And we're just seeing people speak out way too quickly and way too boldly and way too rashly. And there's been some great things too, of course, but so many people feel this need now. I've just been reminded again over the last few days how we now feel this need to say something like this senseless tragedy only has meaning if I can say something, or I feel the pressure. I need to say something. I need to say something that will bring hope in 140 characters or less. And we see a lot of people saying boneheaded things that reflect no thought and reflect no real compassion or care, and it just makes things worse. So the ability to speak so quickly and so widely gives us the desire to, but man, I don't think our wisdom has caught up to our ability.
With regard to the clear racial justice issues that we're going through right now in at least the U.S. that you brought up briefly, it is really astonishing how even big companies, like I've seen stuff from Google and Twitter, feel like they have to, within 24 hours, get a statement out about what their position is. And you kind of bring that out. Sort of the positive or maybe flip side of that is that, you know, me in Memphis, Tennessee, I'm aware of things going on in Minnesota across the country, you know, within a few hours of it happening. And that's pretty incredible. And it doesn't seem like, it seems like that's a fairly new thing in our day. Could you speak to that as well? Sort of the other side of the equation?
Yeah, I'm reminded of that earthquake that hit the eastern seaboard a little while ago, and Twitter got the news to the next state before the earthquake reached it. So people were seeing on Twitter, earthquake, and then they felt the earthquake. Like, that's the speed of the news today, that it moves faster than an earthquake does. It's amazing. And, you know, Neil Postman, again, writing in Amusing Ourselves to Death back in the 80s, was talking about this cycle of impotence now where we hear all this news that doesn't pertain to us. I mean, maybe the issue you're talking about now is a good one. The racial issues that have been taking place in the U.S. I live in Canada. Mm-hmm. So they aren't directly my issues. And there's really nothing I can do about them, right? Maybe that's speaking too broadly, but there's really very little I can do about them. And yet, I'm exposed to the headlines, I'm exposed to the videos, I'm exposed to all of this stuff, but I can't really do anything about it. So Neil Postman wants us to question then, is it news or is it entertainment? Am I being entertained by tragedy? Am I being entertained by awful things happening to others? Because if there's nothing I can do about it, if all it's doing is arousing emotions and anger and frustration and sorrow and all these other things, then what is it really doing for me? And therefore, should I consider, well, what do I do? Should I really expose myself to this stuff? And I think another pressing issue that's come up over the last few days, 3 mornings in a row, we've woken up with the ability to see somebody die, a real video of somebody really dying. And so 2 of these were suspects arrested by the police. The other was actually a police officer being killed execution style. And there it is on mainstream media right in front of us. It's in our news streams. 3 days in a row, I've been exposed to watching people die. That is an amazing ability we have in the world today. Are we thinking about this? Are we thinking about the moral issues related to watching people die day after day, like seeing people be executed? Is that something we should be exposing ourselves to? I think there's just so many questions where we're doing things, we're not thinking about them. We're taking advantage of the technology. We're not asking ourselves, is this a good idea? What are the consequences?
So one of the things I hear you bringing up there is a major pitfall that we have in not thinking clearly about sort of just being a mindless consumer with technology, assuming our own experience is normative, and just really not thinking through all the exposure we have because it's so much. What are some other key pitfalls that you feel like we, as Christians living in such a rapidly changing tech culture, could have today?
I guess the mindlessness that can come with it, right? That we've replaced the quality of information with a quantity of information. So, you know, I tend to have Twitter left open in my sidebar there some days. And so there it is, just hour after hour, more and more and more content. But 99% of it is people directing me to things that don't matter, or people making silly jokes, or people retweeting the same news again and again and again, or things like that. So there's this quantity of information coming my way, but so little of it is of any quality. And we haven't developed, so we've got that ability. We haven't developed filtering yet that really helps, right? We're not filtering these things beyond subscribing or unsubscribing to people or following or unfollowing them. So we're allowing ourselves to be inundated by irrelevant information, each one of which requires some kind of a task from our brain, right? Somehow we have to determine, will I read that? Will I not? Will I take action on that? Will I not? And so that concerns me as well. One of the points I make in the book is that if we want to be people of deep living, we have to be people of deep thinking. And we can't think if we're just being bombarded with information. So we've got to be careful that we're bringing good information in, that we're really doing something with that information, that it's being transformed into wisdom, and that that wisdom is working itself out in our lives. That won't happen if we never take the time to really ponder things.
Sounds like maybe you would recommend some just time of shutting off everything and just, I guess, thinking. I think that's something I realized a little while ago I don't do well, is just really turning off all input and being in silence and just being alone with myself, I guess. Is that something that you would recommend doing, or do you have experience doing that?
Yeah. So we tend to do a week of digital free in the summer as part of our family vacation. And, you know, it gets harder and harder to do because we become more and more dependent upon our devices. So a couple of years ago, we said, that's it. We're going to take our phones, or my phone anyways, when we go on vacation, because, you know, you want to have a phone. But we're not going to check blogs. We're not going to check email. We're not going to do social media. We're just going to go. We got to where we were going and realized we never really figured out how to get to the other places. And so we at least need to jump on Google and start looking for some stuff to do. We need to figure out where we're going. And so we ended up using it a whole lot more than we thought we would, just based on our dependence upon it. So this year we're rethinking that a little bit, and definitely doing 1 week as a family where hopefully we will have nothing with us, or at least no dependency upon those things beyond using the Google Maps or something to that effect.
Cool. The flip side of that question that Ben asked before about the pitfalls of living in a rapidly changing tech culture, could you narrow down for us maybe just a few of the real positives that you think are coming out of where we're at now, with things changing still so rapidly, but I guess the technology that we have at our fingertips today that we can access, that we can use for good, for the gospel, for our benefit in life?
Yeah. Just yesterday, my wife and I were talking about how much we love the Find Friends app for Apple. Our whole family is on there. If my daughter, she jumped on her bike and went off with some friends, it was great just to be able to check in and say, yep, she's right where she said she would be. Everything looks like it's fine. You know, not quite stalking her. On the other hand, she's 13. It's nice to know where she is and that she made it safely to where she was going. So, and it's really nice for my wife and I to be able to track one another. Again, not stalking, just when is she going to be home? I won't call her. I'll just pull her up on the app. So what a great little ability, right? It's a really neat little thing. And maybe we lose sight of what a cool little technology that is. Beyond that, I'm so thankful to be able to communicate. I'm so thankful that many people can have a voice into my life, and that in many cases I can have a voice into theirs. I really appreciate that, and I love the way information flows most of the time. I'm really thankful for it. So, and I think as well about the Bible, how the Bible is able to go forward so easily today. And
yeah,
we're at a time where it seems more and more it's going to be difficult to get the Bible to other people, that, you know, the Bible being as quote unquote homophobic or whatever you want to say, how people perceive it, hate literature, whatever. You can see that there may be a time where it's more and more difficult to distribute it in physical form, but boy, electronically, there's no stopping it. And then you take that to China, you take that to other places, and you just see the possibilities for getting God's word as pure as it's ever been in print form, just sending it out to other people electronically. It's an amazing ability.
On that, one thing I was thinking about whenever you said, we were talking about like posting immediately in response to when a tragedy happens on for example, what happened yesterday in Dallas, and then immediately getting on Facebook and responding to it. I think potentially one reason that we might do that is, like, I played Pokemon Go yesterday, and it feels kind of silly to post about Pokemon Go and, hey, I caught a Caterpie, when this huge tragedy that I know about happened as well. And it's like, I could say to the world, I caught a Caterpie, but then within the back of my mind, everyone, like, how can we not be thinking about what is more important? Although you did make the point, we can't really do anything about it. But anyway, I ask, what I'm getting at now is, you said just now, it's awesome to be able to put the Bible out there in print form and communicate the deep truths of God digitally. And so my question is, like, what do we put on Facebook? Like, if we can't do anything about the tragedy and Pokemon Go just seems like a silly thing to be posting about, like, what ways can we be, what type of things should we put on Twitter and should we put on Facebook? What should we be talking about to benefit those who we have influence on digitally?
Yeah. Well, I guess first I'd want to say that I want to distinguish between you and me as an American and a Canadian, and that you have greater responsibility and greater ability when it comes to recent racial issues in the United States than I do, simply because you're on that side of the border. So, you know, when there's something that happens in Canada or in China, then for you, you're more into the realm of, is this entertainment or not? So, I'd want to make that distinction. But then certainly one of the weird things about social media, and I see this even on my own blog, is how we can go from the sublime to the tragic to the mundane all in one short period. So I can put a list of links out. Here's some suggested reading today. One of them is hilarious. One of them is tragic. One of them is heartrending. And somehow it does seems wrong, right? To put those things so close to one another. It seems to make light of the really tragic things if we have a joke in the next sentence. And I do think that's part of what happens in social media too, where it's hard sometimes to draw proper separation between things that are very, very important and things that are just interesting or fun. So I don't really know what we do about that. And then also guarding against this weird temptation to feel like you need to have an opinion on everything, even when you don't have an opinion. So that's where you get in trouble. You make something up and just end up looking like a bonehead. So I think I think we're still learning. You know, you go back to the history of the telephone, and when the telephone first came around, nobody knew how to answer it, right? So some people would pick up the phone and say, hello. Some people would pick up the phone and say, ahoy, ahoy. Some people would pick up the phone and say, what do you want and who are you? And none of it was rude. Just that hadn't been negotiated yet. It took time. It took years. It took a lot of people getting their phones before that came together. And I think we'll find the same with social media, that over time, we learn what's right and what's wrong. We learn what's acceptable and what's not. We'll develop good customs and habits around these things. For now, we're in a learning process, and I think it pays to be cautious and to be just sensitive to others. Maybe on a day when someone else is suffering or another country is going through a tragedy, that's maybe not the time and place to post about Pokemon or to make a funny joke.
It's really interesting, the issue of voice being brought up and just humor next to seriousness, and how does that work? We haven't sort of negotiated that out as a society or a culture in our use of this technology. I feel that tension in my own life as different people from different parts of my life follow me, whether from church or work or various hobbies that I'm involved in. And it's sort of interesting because I could tweet about one of the three of those things and the other groups just totally don't understand at all. And it's sort of in a lighter sense, I feel that sort of difference of voice and the amalgamation of all those different things into one timeline. I think that's probably why you see accounts that are dedicated to only humor or only one kind of only news, for example, only one kind of tweeting or posting. Also, as we're recording this, I noticed that just before the Babylon Bee, which is a Christian satire site that I really love, and I think probably we all of us that are familiar with it probably do, posted about the issues that have been going on for the last 3 days. With sort of those racial justice issues, the death of the police officers in Dallas last night. And it was interesting. I read the post And there was a lot of backlash almost immediately, that, you know, there are certain things you satire and certain things you don't. And people were very hurt by that. Mm. And the post has actually since, in the last probably 30 minutes, been deleted. And Babylon Bee on Twitter has issued an apology and tried to clarify, you know, we weren't meaning to satirize this. We were meaning to express, you know, heartfelt sadness and yet also a little sense of humor, which we're known for. And so even sites that big are still finding their voice and figuring out how to use these things together. And it's really interesting as you bring that out, Tim.
Yeah, and maybe that's a perfect example. I was thinking of the same one as we were talking. There's a site that the bread and butter is responding to contemporary issues. And of course, and I don't want to cast aspersions on the writers of the site or anything like that, but right. Just see that as maybe a little snapshot of the temptation we face is to say something clever, something mm-hmm. that will gain social media traction, get mm-hmm. lots of likes or lots of retweets or something, get it out there right away without proper time for reflection, for prayer, for bouncing off other people. Hey, is this offensive? And so on. And whenever we feel the need to speak quickly, I mean, the Proverbs address this head on, right? The God's word, the 2,000, 3,000-year-old words still have so much to say to us because the human heart is the same. The desire to be appreciated, the desire to be praised, the desire to be thought clever, all of these things are so alive today. And social media, it gives us the ability, and then it gives us the desire. It gives us the platform. It gives us everything but the wisdom. That's yeah. a lot harder to come to.
That's a good point.
It's true. To bring it back to humor, I wondered if Pokemon Go was going to come up. Have you heard about that at all, Tim? It just released in the last few days.
I've heard of it. I don't know what it is.
Okay. Tank and I were talking about before the call, having tried it out. I think it just released yesterday. But it's basically, you're probably familiar with Pokemon, I imagine.
A little bit, yeah.
And it's
my kids never really got into it, and I'm, you know, a grown up. So
yeah, yeah. It was really popular when we were kids, and so there's sort of that nostalgia factor.
Yeah, yeah.
That we have to sort of see what's going on with it since this is the new big thing. But it's an augmented reality game where you sort of geolocated Pokemon are in the real world and you walk around and see them and can interact with them through your smartphone. So pretty interesting use of technology at the very least, but sort of gamified, if you will, also.
So now you physically have to catch them all.
That's the idea.
So. That's not weird at all.
So I think, you know, as we transition, we talked about social media. I just kind of mentioned augmented reality and wanted to transition now to talk about sort of the new and bigger sort of pieces of technology in the modern period and even just in the last few years of virtual reality, self-driving cars, things like that. Is there anything that sticks out to you, Tim, as something that we need to pay more attention to or something even that's more exciting to you as a Christian now?
Yeah, well, I think self-driving cars I find especially interesting, and that's partly because I read a biography on Elon Musk and just, you know, as one of these quirky, bizarre, awful, brilliant people who comes into the world, you know, kind of like a Steve Jobs type figure, mm-hmm. just a real visionary and able to do things nobody else thought possible and, you know, with many of the same non-winning personal characteristics, all of that. But you think about the self-driving car, which of course he's championed, as have others, and to think about the moral issues that are attached to it. And I know there's been some writing on this, but just the idea that when you go driving in your car right now and something bad happens, you don't make a decision what to do. Your body just naturally takes over. You swerve to the left, you swerve to the right, you put yourself in harm's way, you put the other person in harm's way. That all just happens. When we switch to self-driving cars, we are now programming the cars what to do in that situation. And so the car will have to determine, do I swerve to the left or do I swerve to the right? Like somebody is going to program that car. Right. It's probably not going to be a pastor. It's probably not going to be an ethicist. It's probably not going to be a politician. It will probably be a programmer. You know, somebody somewhere in an office is going to make the decision that in the event of a bad situation, this car is going to do everything it can to protect your life. It will, if it has to swerve and run over that pedestrian, it will, if that's what it takes to save your life. Or the car will say, no, you are the lowest rated person here. I will preserve the life of that pedestrian. And if that harms you, then so be it. there is just a world of important ethical issues bound up in self-driving cars and this new technology of self-driving cars. And maybe in that we can see just a glimpse of some of the difficulty that comes in a world with these great new technologies. Like, it's not just a technology. It's not just a light bulb that turns on and off. This is something that has to be programmed to behave in specific ways under specific circumstances, and human lives will be at stake. So I think it's a fascinating issue to see how we go about solving this, how we go about protecting people's lives or not. It's going to be fascinating to see.
Absolutely. I think so too. We've had about 40 something episodes now of Tech Reformation, and have talked about talked about self-driving cars a little bit, and talked about a lot of sort of the newer technology as well, a lot on virtual reality, some on, just to name a few. And I'd love to hear, your thoughts on, again, kind of what should we be looking out for? What should we be excited about? What are maybe even you personally excited about? But some of the things we've mentioned, space, we did a whole episode on the simulation comment that you mentioned from, Elon Musk. We've talked about podcasts. There seems to be quite a resurgence in podcasting, today as well. We've talked about drones quite a bit as well. Does any of that sort of stand out to you as different from the rest, if you will?
And automation was another one. Sorry, just to throw in there, automation in terms of, the changeover of how jobs work and technology taking over some of what used to be done by people as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think all of them resonate to differing degrees. And I think with all of them, we quickly identify the benefits and we will slowly identify the drawbacks, because mm-hmm. that tends to be the way we do it. Again, you go back to McLuhan, Postman, guys like that, they would tell you every technology comes with benefits and with risks. We're really good at seeing the benefits. We're very poor at seeing the risks. And so, you know, you buy a drone or people bring in drones, you think, oh, that's neat. I'll be able to take pictures from way up high. And then next thing you know, it's looking at your wife through the bedroom window, mm. right? Or looking at your daughter through the bedroom window. So you realize that you can get these technologies for one reason. They will be used for evil ones too. So any of these are fascinating, but every single one, we, especially as Christians, have to be thinking very, very carefully. What will we do with these? What will other people do with these? How will these be used? I mean, just think about how the iPhone, how so many of our technologies we would have handled differently had we known then what Edward Snowden taught us now, right? We would have related very, very differently to these devices, knowing that there's a pretty good possibility you might be listened to at some point, or things are being recorded, or, you know, all the stuff that came to light. So we've got to get better at identifying the drawbacks before we just glut ourselves on all the benefits.
Do you think it could be described in gluttonous terms, even? I noticed that you used that word.
Yeah, I think in many ways it can be, and that's not necessarily bad. When it comes to books, I think we think gluttony is good, right? Like who has too many books? Who can read too much, right? Yeah. So that, I mean, maybe gluttony isn't the best term in that way, right? But certainly when it comes to our digital devices, I mean, when it comes to my iPhone, I hate the fact that anytime nothing else is going on, I feel my hand in my pocket pulling that thing back out.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like to stand in a line in a grocery store anymore without staring at a phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't mean to. I don't plan to. It just happens. I hate it. And I do it, you know, at traffic lights. I feel my hand reaching for my phone. Like, for 12 seconds, what on earth am I going to do with myself? I might actually have to think.
Yeah.
So I find these things really, that gluttonous part of it, I find very, very disturbing. So, and just to, you know, for a time, it's easy to force myself into self-control, but then 2 months later, I find that I'm right back to where I was before. So those really, really bother me.
Yeah. I think that for me, that's been something that is it's a constant, learning curve and battle at the same time. I would agree with what you're saying there, fairly wholeheartedly, just the fact that, particularly the iPhone, I suppose, has a bit to answer for, in that it really does become an extension of self in some ways, so that when we're using it, we don't even realize what we're doing half the time.
That's true.
It is just so natural. And I think I often feel like, you know, when I got my first iPhone back in 2009 or whenever it was, I wish I'd had the words of Calvin, you know, that quote about the human heart being an idol factory, running through my head, just as a warning, because not to say I'm the most idolatrous person in the world or anything, but I think it is so easy to let ourselves get distracted more than we should be by something that is in a lot of ways really, really useful, but can in other ways be quite damaging if we don't steward it well.
Yeah, and I think it's so helpful. We as Christians have access to the language of idolatry, right? And Neil Postman, being, I believe, a Jewish background, had some understanding of the Old Testament and used it quite liberally in his books. Marshall McLuhan, Roman Catholic, to some degree as well, used the Bible. But we as Christians have access to this language of idolatry, of what satisfies your heart or what makes you believe your heart will be satisfied. So I think we're able to look at this in those idolatrous terms and just see there's something I think I need that this phone is going to give me. So I need to understand what's going on in my heart that makes me feel like checking Twitter is going to validate me. That it, you know, maybe getting likes or getting retweets or something is that important to me that it just keeps drawing me back again and again. Well, I need to look at that on a heart level, not just on a behavioral level. What's going on in my heart? That's the most important thing, because then I can identify that behavior and I can really root out that behavior once I've dealt with it on the deepest level.
Yeah, that's good. It's challenging, but it's super worthwhile.
Yep.
All right. So Ben mentioned a little while ago that we did an episode on the power of audio. So we talked about podcasting and communicating through, I guess, the spoken word. And obviously, we run a podcast every week. The Tech Reformation we've been doing now for, I think this is, we're up to 45 or something like that. And I know you've been recently on a few different podcasts. You've been hanging out with Calvinist Batman and also the guys over at The Rugged Marriage, which was great. Both really good episodes, by the way. But I guess just wanted to ask as well, in terms of, I guess, looking again at the Christian world and how we interact as Christian people in terms of the content that we produce and what we're putting out there and what impact that has and the responsibility that goes along with that. What sort of impact do you think that, I guess, blogging, which is, I guess, the written form, and then maybe podcasting as the audio has had for the kingdom, or maybe, you know, a counter impact, a negative impact, positive or negative? What do you sort of see has come out of those two things, for the kingdom?
So first, I'd want to put it in perspective and say that a big podcast would still not be accepted for radio because the audience would be too small. So, just looking, if you look at Nielsen's recent research on how Americans access media, you see radio utterly dominating, which fascinates me and still surprises me just what a big medium it is. So we can talk about podcasting like it's this big thing. And I mean, to some degree it is. It's having a real impact, but it's much like blogging in that it just still doesn't have the audience of the big old medium, which for blogging would be either television or newspaper or something, right? So we're still relatively small, especially in the Christian world, where we've necessarily narrowed our audience so much. Mm. That said, I think these are great. I think probably the joy of podcasting, perhaps even more than the joy of blogging, is being able to focus on a narrow thing and have an audience that is very interested in that topic. So for a while now, people have come to me and said, right, I want to blog. What do I do? And I say, well, don't try and be a generalist. There's enough generalists out there already. It's harder and harder to break in doing that. But find something and be an expert at it. Find something that's of interest to you and go and be an expert there. And that's what happens with podcasting. And I think it's fascinating. So people who are interested in technology can listen in here. People who are interested in marriage and family can listen to the other one. And people who love reformed superheroes can listen into Calvinist Batman. So you can develop a niche, a specialization, and draw people in. I think that's wonderful. And then just bring a Christian perspective to that topic.
Yeah, for sure. I guess following on from that, so you said you've been blogging now for, like, is it 14 years or something that you've been doing Chalies.com, or is it longer?
I think it was 2002 I really started, so yeah, 14 years.
Yeah, okay.
And then every day for 12 now, or just over 12, I've been doing it on a daily basis.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, which is amazing. I think, yeah, so one of the other things that I think in terms of podcasting and blogging, and there's a slight difference there, but maybe you can talk about your experience from a blogging perspective. I think one of the reasons that we enjoy podcasting is because for us, there's normally four of us, four hosts of Tech Reformation. And so we have the ability every week, because of the technology that we use, to get on and have a conversation between four people, all in different parts of the world, in different parts of America and Australia. And one of us is about to move to Japan as a missionary. And so we have sort of this open conversation that goes for an hour or something. And then we have a real community, like you said, listeners who are interested in a particular topic, who then throughout the week continue to dialogue over that and talk about how that's working in their lives as Christians, or what they're thinking about something that might be coming along in the pipeline in terms of the tech space. Is it the same sort of thing with blogging for you? Like, do you find that you have a lot of – is there like a community aspect to blogging in terms of comments and following up with people? Do people interact with you? Is that kind of a way that you can – I don't know if minister to people is the right word, but if you can, have some sort of positive influence over people, not just through the initial output of content, but then through the follow-up that goes along with blogging as well?
Yeah, I think that used to be the case more, and that's partly back when I had comments on my site. I've since removed them. But I think when the blogosphere got started, there was definitely a community. But those were the days before social media, or when blogging was social media, at least back then. There was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there was no Google Plus, and you know what that's done for community. At that time, blogs were, there was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of, I would write and that person would respond and we'd leave comments, and there was definitely a community feel. That's very much been lost over the last few years, where now each one of us is kind of doing our own thing and we might link back and forth a little, but no, there isn't community. That's really moved to social media, and so people have more of their own community based around their own friends. There are probably some blogs that are doing that better when people really follow up with the comments and so on, but to be honest, just comments got to be such a big thing. There were so many of them and it was taking so much time, I couldn't follow up on them anymore. Therefore, the community aspect was breaking down anyway, so I just got rid of them altogether.
Cool. Yeah, that's fair enough. So, obviously, you've been doing the blog thing for quite a while and doing it really well. As Ben said, we, Ben's read your blog, I've read your blog, we quite enjoy it. I think Tank's had a bit of a look as well. And you're obviously putting out content super regularly, daily, in fact. So, plenty of experience to draw from, and I was just curious about what you would say to a younger version of yourself, or just a young person in general. So, you know, I'm thinking sort of 18, 21, 25, someone who feels like maybe they've got something to say, maybe, there's something stirring in their spirit or something that they feel like they have something to communicate, but they haven't taken their first steps into publishing any sort of content for the glory of God or anything like that yet. What would you sort of want to communicate to them in terms of wisdom from someone who's been doing this for a while and how to do it right and how to do it with the right motivations and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, I guess I would first warn them against wanting to be famous, because I get a lot of emails from people that are essentially that, just saying, how can I be famous? I want to have a voice. I want to be well known. I want to make my life speaking and preaching. And I think those people really, really need to be careful. Because the pursuit of fame, then you're just using blogging as a tool, and then you're just creating BuzzFeed garbage content. You're not creating things that will really serve people. You're creating things that will get shares so you can get a reputation so you can move on to the next thing. So yeah. I'd be very careful there. The second thing is, learn to love writing, right? Like, learn to really enjoy the medium. Don't just use the medium to further other goals. And again, I think a lot of people do that. They don't really like writing. So develop a passion for writing. And the third thing would be, make sure that you are endorsed by your own local church. We got enough people out there who are heroes in the online world, but the local church can't stand them. So make sure that your local church endorses you, that your elders are giving you oversight, that people who can look you in the eye and kick you in the rear end are able and willing to do that, that you give them the freedom to do that. And yes, I don't know if I've said this before, but we actually moved churches years ago, more than 10 years ago now, primarily because my old church wasn't able to give oversight. And I really desired having people who would tell me, no, that was a bad idea. You done bad. I really wanted to have that. And I was able to go to this other church where, you know, I didn't go in with that, but I didn't go in saying, I need this from you, but just, I knew that there were people there of character who were like-minded and would be really willing to help me to see this as ministry and to help me along. And their voice has been hugely important in my life. It was especially a voice of restraint, though sometimes a voice of encouragement too, when I've had to say hard mm-hmm. things or things that others have disagreed with. So definitely local church primarily, that first. Any outside ministry grows out of your local church ministry. You've got to get the priority right.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's a good reminder for us here.
Mm.
Okay, so we sent out word that we were going to have Tim on the show in our Slack team beforehand. And so I've got a couple of questions here from some folks who have been pretty active in our Slack. By the way, if you want to join our Slack team, you can do so for free at slack.techreformation.com. So let's go to the Slack. First up, Tim, Joshua Poles wants to know, what is your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Mint chocolate chip.
Nice. My wife loves that.
Jonathan, well, I usually buy strawberry, and I love strawberry ice cream, but it's always disappointing. So I've learned to stick with the mint chocolate chip, which has never let me down.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Jonathan Greer wants to know, how do you come up with so many things to write about on your blog?
I read a lot. Honestly, if I stop reading, I run out of things to say. So I read a lot, and that generates thoughts, generates ideas, generates questions I want to answer. And that's where it comes from. I don't have people, almost never do I write things that people suggest. People don't send me things to write about. So I end up just getting it through reading other stuff.
So Brad Bayenhoff is curious about your past in network administration before you became a pastor elder.
Yeah.
Do you want to go into a little bit about that for those who don't know?
Yeah. So when I graduated from college, I had a BA in history, which did me very little good. And for a time, I went from there to Starbucks, which I know sounds cliche, but there I was, and was sort of on a management path in Starbucks, I guess. But, you know, I was doing that for a bit and enjoying it, but realizing I needed something else. And my dad had actually found out about the school that would do tech training, and he ended up convincing me to go off there. So I went off and got a bunch of administrative certificates, and so Microsoft certifications and various hardware things, and got all trained up and server stuff, and did that for a number of years and generally enjoyed it, but just ended up working for bad companies. And three times I worked for a company that got bought up by an American corporation. They took the technology and shut down the company. They did that three times. And by the end of it, I thought, that's enough. So I went into web design independently and did that for a number of years until I was called into ministry.
Nice.
So I still have an MCSE, or two or three of them, actually, the Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer certifications. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I probably got them in a cupboard somewhere.
Joshua also wants to know if you have any note-taking tips and tricks.
Note-taking in what context?
Yeah, that's a great question. He didn't say.
So I don't take a lot of notes, really. If I do, I tend to take it in church, and I use Logos on an iPad. So I actually take an iPad Pro to church with me, which embarrasses the heck out of my wife. It just makes me enjoy it even more. So I got this giant tablet on my lap, and I tend to type notes into there, right into Logos, while I'm listening to sermons.
Joseph William wants to know if you have any advice, tips, or tricks on helping on writing and creating effective blogs and keeping up with them. I think you've kind of talked about that. Anything you would add?
Yeah, just write. Everybody wants to learn how to write. Everybody wants to master writing, but few people want to actually write. So you just got to write. Mm. You got to set yourself some goals. And for a time, I was trying to write 1,000 words a day, which was bizarre. I mean, it was a lot of writing, but it just pushed me and pushed me and pushed me. So just keep writing, make it a habit, and just do it.
Another one, a follow-up from Brad on the past in network administration. What changed in your life to draw you away from IT and into full-time ministry?
It was the external call, so the call of the church, given through the elders of the church, who came to me and said, first, we think you've got the calling of someone or the character of someone who could be an elder in this church. Would you like to serve as an elder? We did a long examination process, and I was ordained as an elder. Then we had a church plant go out, and that opened up a position on staff And so they asked if I would like to fill that position, and I did. So that was really my final break with IT right then. The funny thing is, I was just about to try to go full-time blogging at that point. So I had to delay that about 5 years, actually. But yeah, I'm so, so glad I was pastoring, and I still love being an elder. And I think anybody could look at my blogging from 6 years ago and today and see that there's a big difference. And the difference is that I've now seen people as they really are. I've realized that we tend to come up with very trite answers because we're not realizing there's so much complexity in this world, so much complexity in people's lives. So thinking as a pastor has been so, so important. And I could easily go back to pastoring anytime if I had an extra 40 hours in my week. I really, really love it. Mm-hmm.
Three more and then we'll wrap up. Two funny and one serious, which brings some irony to our previous conversation. So a couple of people asking about Pokemon Go. We talked about that earlier. I'll just summarize the questions with this. Can we expect to see a BuzzFeed style blog post from Tim Challies on Pokemon Go in any form?
I would need to know what Pokemon Go is first. So I'm going to defer that question for now.
Sounds good. And another funny one, Brian Forbes wants to know what's your favorite podcast to be on, but you don't have to answer if you don't want to.
Yeah, I don't listen to podcasts, so I don't know. I'm on quite a few of them, and I've done them in the past, but I don't really listen to them. So yeah, I'll leave that there.
Sounds good.
I'm thinking of starting one, so is everybody, I know. But so then that would be my new favorite to be on.
Sounds good. Well, I know I'm looking forward to that if you do.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for that for sure.
And then the last question from David McCucky. Do you have any thoughts on the Trinitarian eternal functional subordination controversy that's currently ongoing?
Oh, boy. I think I have a lot of thoughts on it. I don't know how many I'm really willing to share.
That's fair.
I think it highlights the difficulties and the immaturity of the media we're using right now. By immaturity, I just mean they haven't developed to the point where we'll know how to use them at their best and we'll know how to interpret what's said on them in a fair way. So I think we've seen a lot of things said and we weren't sure of the tone. We weren't sure of the language. And I think it's really shown that, we have a long way to go in learning how to use these things well. And it's just fascinating that the kind of discussions that used to be had by academics in academic settings are now playing out in the public eye on social media. So it's kind of interesting that we get to see these things as he's got, you know, these heavyweights take each other on. Mm. It's interesting. But I think a lot of people are kind of disconcerted by it because we're just not used to seeing that.
Yep. Very true. Well, Tim, thank you so much for your time today. We have loved having you on. It's been incredibly challenging and thought-provoking, and I know you've given me personally a lot to think on and meditate on as I use technology in my Christian life. If others have felt the same, we'd love to have you as a regular listener to Tech Reformation. We try to talk about this every week and do a deep dive on one piece of technology and how it affects us. So you can find more at techreformation.com. And Tim, people can find you and your content at Challies.com and at Challies on Twitter. Is there anywhere else you'd mention?
Just Facebook/Challies, same awesome. Thing. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks, guys. This was fun. Enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it, too. Thank you.
And that was Tim Challies. Thanks again, Tim, for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, that really was a great interview. I'm sad I couldn't be there, but yeah, it was good.
It's probably one of my favorite episodes we've done. Do you guys have any recos this week?
No, I don't.
Insert crickets here.
I'm afraid not. But Ben, it seems you have something interesting.
Well, I will be the reco hog once again, and I will recommend, I don't know if I've done this before. I don't think I have. The guys didn't think I had. And if I have, they've forgotten about it, so it's time for another reco for it. And that is one of the greatest TV shows you will find called Merlin on Netflix. It was a BBC show a few years ago, I think 2008 to 2012. You can find all 5 seasons, I think, on Netflix. And I put a link in the show notes. So a friend recommended this show to me a while back, to me and my wife, as the show that, like no other, has made him love Jesus and long for his kingdom more than any other. And so obviously with that recommendation, I had to check it out. We did, and it quickly became one of our favorite shows, really of all time. So check out Merlin on Netflix. One of the reasons I will highlight that about how great it is it's got a good story, got good character development, but most importantly, it's good, clean, wholesome family fun. There's like no like Game of Thrones action in it, and yet it's still like great quality. Give it a chance. It's kind of, they kind of are learning how to act in the first few episodes, but it's really good. So check it out. Merlin on Netflix.
I actually have a record this week as well. Again, we are super thankful to Tim Challies for coming on the show. And I want to recommend his book, The Next Story, Faith, Friends, Family, and the Digital World. It's a really great resource on how to think carefully and live faithfully as a Christian in this increasingly digital world that we live in. So check it out.
Oh, you know what? I do actually have a reco. I will recommend Parks and Rec. I'm really enjoying it. Tanya and I started off, in the first season and had no idea what the hype was about, because the first season's pretty bad. But the second season starts, and it is all of a sudden a fantastic show. So you should watch it, get through the first season, and then decide in the second season whether you want to keep watching it. That is also on Netflix. So highly recommend it.
And if you would like to connect with us, you can jump on our Slack channel. Sign up for free at slack.techreformation.com. We've been having a rousing discussion, thanks to Calvinist Batman and his show with Wayne Grudem, over the EFS Trinitarian controversy the last few days or weeks. Particularly David McCookie and I, whose name I know I mispronounced in the Tim Challies interview. Apologies for that, David.
Yeah, and we just started a Pokemon channel as well. So two new channels, Pokemon and Trinity. Kind of polar opposites as far as seriousness goes, but both fun. Both a good time. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech Reformation.
You can visit our website, techreformation.com, to search for past shows and topics.
And you can email us at ask@techreformation.com with any feedback you have.
We are a part of the Theology Mix Network. Check out their website and master iTunes feed in the show notes.
Review us on iTunes, recommend us on Overcast after you resubscribe to the podcast.
And as always, our music is by Matthew Parker. You can check him out on SoundCloud and iTunes. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Welcome to episode 94 of the Tech Reformation. Oh my gosh.